My mother taught me there's always something to share. Always make your heart more open, because that's just what God does. God comes in and helps us to open our heart more to people. And that is its own reward quite often. I am fiercely determined. I feel like I am so attuned to my sense of purpose to be a blessing to humanity that nothing will get in the way of that. I believe in a very intentional universe. I have studied a variety of concepts of the sacred, and I feel like we all got it a little right. And I believe that we all bear within our beings and our core selves the essence of the divine. And I am determined to stay grounded in that so I can be guided. And when I'm guided by that, even though it may not be comfortable, it feels right. And it feels relational. That's even a better word. It feels relational. I feel like I'm connected with a higher order of things, if that makes any sense. And it delights me. It delights me. I can't imagine not having a sense of the sacred. My theology has changed and grown over the years, I still feel a strong essence of what is greater than me, operating through me as me. And that is very sustaining.
It's interesting because, I mean, I just think about physics again, because my mind, like the sacred, operates at a totally different, higher level, you know? So you have to get into the right mindset, kind of like have the right attitude or the right relation with it to then work with that energy, which is so divine.
Born into United Methodism, basically, christened and everything, United Methodist. I will baptize, really, I guess it would be more so, but we use the word christened. My parents were not married. My father, bless his heart, he was an apostolic holiness preacher. Daddy actually has a very interesting path, not to get off on him, but I'll just say he had a wife and 8 kids, and he walked out on them, unfortunately, years before I was born. And the thing about it is, when I have talked to my siblings about that, their report was, we were glad when he left because he was just so mean. And so Daddy and my mother got together, and I was produced. And basically, my mother was so happy to have me. And I've heard the stories over the years about how glad she was. You know, even not being able to count on him, she was just glad she was having this baby, and she had me. She was so happy, and my mother was very overprotective. And, you know, from what I recall, we were always in church. From the time I was 5 years old to about 11, my mother went seeking. She just felt like UMC wasn't that UMC anyway, wasn't giving her what she needed. And so she went to various other churches. Mind you, my father was not a consistent presence in my life when I was small. So there were times when, you know, I would see him and he'd pick me up on weekends, and sometimes he'd miss times and all that. But whenever Daddy was preaching, I was never with him. And that's kind of the structure of being, you know, so-called outside child. You don't get to be included in everything. And even though he had left his wife and he would take me and drop me off to his kids' home and stuff like that, they had kids that were my age because they were older. And so I grew up, you know, off and on playing with my nieces and nephews and, you know, that seemed more like cousins. And only heard him actually preach once as an adult because I chose to go on my own. But my mother would take me to these Pentecostal churches. And I think what she was looking for was more emotional engagement. And so I was raised with that influence. We studied with Jehovah's Witnesses for about 6 months. Took me to visit a Seventh-day Adventist church. she was just trying to figure out what kind of scratched her itch, I think. And then we came back to the United Methodist Church when I was about 11. And then from that point, I think it was more consistent. I remember going to a W.E.B. Grant tent meeting and, oh God, they were talking about Armageddon and the end times and playing really loud music. To where it almost felt like the horses were galloping on top of the tent, you know, it just scared me to death. And so I grew up with a combination of all these different things. And what, you know, initially it was just very like daunting, like, oh my God, what do I believe? Because as a child, when you're more concrete and you're understanding, you think like, I got to pick something. But as I continued to grow, I learned, oh my God, everybody thinks they're right. Oh, and it's just interesting. And so then as an adult, it was still somewhat confusing. And, you know, I ended up, bless my heart, getting married to a man who was so much like my father that I realized, like, I still have some work to do. And so I continued to do personal work. And what I discovered is as a child, that mentality that I have to pick something was limited to childlike thinking. As an adult, I am very open and I consider myself multi-faith in that I respect all pro-social faiths. And so when I chose to join the Unity Church, after I read their beliefs and their tenets and how they developed, it just felt right. I'm like, I can have my own subjective belief system, and I can also be really open to respect other people's belief systems. And that felt right to me. So what I learned in childhood and my upbringing is that a lot of people are intense about a lot of things. And what it boils down to is, how are you going to choose to live your life without projecting anything onto anyone else? What do you count as sacred? And how can you live into that? Because I see the world very differently. I don't have religious stuff to break off of me when, you know, I talk to some of my friends who've been in denominations all their lives, which is great. And you know, for them, you know, there's been a lot of stability there. And then for others who've been in certain denominations all their lives, they were like, yeah, I never quite agreed with this and this and this. And so they had a lot of wounding to outgrow. And so I thought, wow, I got to experience an assortment of people and to learn that, you know, they're just people. There's people trying to figure stuff out, much like the people who wrote the Bible. They're just trying to figure it out. It's not that they're right. They're right for them, but they're not right for the rest of humanity. And so then I began to respect that journey. Early on in my walk, I was very evangelical, very, very evangelical. And so there were certain details that mattered more. And what I found is that over the years, as I developed this different view of God, I really went from God on the throne with the scepter in his hand, with the living creatures around him, you know, God with the long beard, to God as an energetic source leading each of us on the planet to our highest good. And when I say that, I want to qualify that by saying the stuff, quote unquote, of God for me is in every human being. But there are structures of power that prevent people from living that out. And I have to say that as a person who is part of the New Thought camp, you know, if you will, because sometimes we can get so into, you know, love and light that we forget about structural injustice. And my heart is tethered to the reality of that as a Black woman, a Black lesbian. I ain't gonna let that go. I'm not going to drink Kool-Aid and act like that doesn't exist. Okay. I don't get the privilege of being privileged in this lifetime, at least. And so that does not escape me. And I will be an influence for good in any way that I can regarding that. So I say that with that qualifier. We must do better, especially those of us who believe in so much love and so much light. We have to look for the structural injustice and be a blessing to other people, or else they're not going to experience the same love and light we claim to experience. I tend to see God as being very operative every day, all day. So when you ask me for specific incidences, it's hard for me to kind of wrap my brain around because I just tend to not think of it the same. But I will say this, and this is hard for me to say too, because if I look at the blessings in my life, like recently, I have a mentor, a woman I asked to be a mentor about 3, maybe 4 years ago, an African-American woman who was absolutely beautiful. Her name is Reverend Kathy Beasley. She is ordained in the Unity Church and also in Christian Science, actually, and is quite amazing. I mean, sorry, Divine Science. And so I was hired by her to be her director of operations at the Central Florida Center for Spiritual Living. And it amazes me how things come around. And, you know, I'm doing my, you know, I just do what I do. And sometimes I don't, I'm usually trying to think of the bigger picture and the subjective picture in life. And sometimes I just get surprised. You know, one day I was speaking and I was like, oh my God, like I have two aunts that I both love. I love them both dearly. I have one aunt who's very evangelical and one aunt who did her own, you know, research of various, you know, religious cultures, and she landed in Divine Science, and which is now the Center of Spiritual Living. And so it's so interesting how over the years she would suggest a book here, you know, or send me a tape or a CD, and how through my whole walk, I went from evangelicalism to this place of new thought where I'm like, this is just my personal natural evolution. When I look at that, and that's been relatively recently, I thought, oh my God, like I could not have built this path if I tried, because I wasn't on this track. I was on a very evangelical track. I was very concerned about being right and helping other people be right. Get it together, get right or get left, we used to say, and laugh about it. You know, the whole left behind thing, which is completely no longer funny. So when I look at this pandemic and how awful it's been, it's just been completely awful for so many people. For me to interview, finding out about that position and then interviewing for it, not having planned or known, or, you know, it's just the way that things came together. And for me to get to serve such a sweet group of people, and they're just really deep and smart and like, man, they're just cool people, that I would get to be included in that in the way that I am and just get to be in community with them and love them. For me, it is the stuff of God. Believing personally that God is both internal and transcendent, that there are things that we will never know about the divine. And learning, that's okay. That's part of the surprise of living. And so for me to get hired and to be able to have that as a second job and as a delightful, you know, responsibility, and to be included in the community the way that I am. I mean, while people, God bless them, are losing their jobs, I gained a second job. And so to me, that's God. And so because of that, I took that very seriously. And I thought, like, who can I bless? Because everybody ain't doing all right. And so I've been able, out of the overflow that I've been given, to help some folks. And that means a lot to me, because growing up, I feel like because of the situation that I was in, you know, being the child of a single mother, we were always on the receiving end of, you know, of whatever. And there just seemed to never be, you know, enough. So my mom had her own struggles. And so for me to be in a position where, okay, I get to be the one that gets, you know, to be the blesser, that's just the rent you pay for being on the planet, to share. And my mother even taught me, in the little that we had, be benevolent. Be benevolent anyway. God will always give it back to you. Don't worry about it. And I remember in my younger years, I worried about it. I'm like, you're giving stuff, like, you know, there are things that didn't even make sense. And my mother always instilled in me, you got to open your heart wide, honey. You open your heart wide. I was probably in the second grade, and there was this little kid, bless his heart, like me, in my class, and he lived with his family in the neighborhood. And I remember my mother telling me, you know, their family is struggling right now. And we lived in a 2-bedroom apartment. It was decent. And I had my bedroom and everything, and I mostly slept with my mom. I was just, you know, mama's baby, all up under her. And so I had my bedroom with all my stuff, but, you know, it was really rarely in there. And so she said, you know, their family is having a hard time. And she said, I need us to give them, you know, the stuff in your room. And I'm like, what? You know, and I'm an only child, nonetheless, no matter how benevolent she taught me to be. I was in second grade. And so I'm like, yeah, that didn't go well. And I was like, why? So she was like, they need it. And, you know, they got somebody coming over, you know, to check and make sure that they have it. And she explained it to me as you would a child. And so that day we went over to their home, which was about 4 or 5 blocks away. We walked there. And I remember going into that home and I remember looking on the floor and there was like a bunch of sand on the floor. And it was a house that wasn't the greatest house. I remember them having a pit bull. I remember sitting down and playing with the dog. I remember there being a lot of kids, all different ages. And Nicholas, I think, was the youngest. And I remember looking around, meeting his mom. And as I sat there and took it all in, I remember thinking, oh, I get it. And later on, I grew to understand it was a DCF thing, a Department of Children and Families thing. Like they needed to have, everybody in the home needed to have an adequate space to sleep in. And it needed to be set up to where it was appropriate so that the kids wouldn't get removed from the home. When I experienced that, it's like, okay, I went from being frustrated about my stuff being given away to I'm with my mom all the time. There's enough to share. And she bought me a whole new bedroom suit anyway. I mean, it just happened in time. So it wasn't even a big deal. But it set the groundwork for me to consider there is no shortage of resources in the world. We just have to look at some things differently. And what did it matter to me anyway? Outside of being young and I don't want to say selfish, but just not knowing better, just being at that place of maturity where I couldn't see beyond my own experience, I had a certain perspective. And then when I went and I spent time, that perspective changed because now I was connected with the people. And now I understood because something happened because I was there in their environment relating with them. And so I think for me, I could give you so many examples of my mother's benevolence and how she sowed seeds of care in me. That for me, when I think of God or experiences, that's what I think of. How was I set up to think about other individuals, even in a place of being quote unquote disadvantaged. My mother taught me there's always something to share. Always make your heart more open because that's just what God does. God comes in and helps us to open our heart more to people. And that is its own reward quite often. She taught me how to be a decent human being. Oh my God. I've worked with many people over the years, probably thousands at this point, who were given everything except their parents' souls. I'm like, God, I got her soul. You know, she imprinted upon me the importance of being a good human. And so for that, I can look back redemptively, having worked through the hurtful stuff and go, golly, I'm so grateful for her. And had she lived again, she died the semester before I graduated from undergrad. And I say if she had lived a few more years, because as I matured and became more capable of talking about my feelings from an adult perspective, I could have had the advantage of asking her questions and getting clarity and getting her on a different level. And I think that would have resolved a lot of things, but it didn't work out that way. So it is what it is. But I can definitely say as a 46-year-old person at this point, I think everybody is doing the best they can. I mean, I'm sure there's some that aren't, whatever. I'm not talking about them. I don't know them. But everybody's doing the best they can. And the main person I'm responsible for is me. How am I going to take what's been given to me? How am I going to open my heart wider? How am I going to become able to see the people that I have held to task about stuff, even in my heart? How can I let them off the hook and go, damn, they're all right. They're just trying to figure out God too. Just like all the people who wrote the Bible, just like all those people I engaged with when I was little, just like my father, just like my mother. People are just trying to figure shit out, like lighten up. And I think that's the lesson of my life, lighten up and just love people.
Sounds like, and also listening to you about your mother, it sounds like she really modeled for you how to be a blessing. And that is such a powerful, powerful gift. And, you know, some of the people I interview might call that powerful magic. Mm-hmm. That is, it's a gift. She bequeathed that to you. It's, you know, it's not tangible out there. You can't grab it, but you make that gift tangible in the world, which is where the power is.
Yes. And to me, that's the essence of God.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for telling me about that, because I've been reflecting on just listening to your path. And, you know, you're talking about your aunt sending you these books or these tapes or CDs. And it really does sound like your path was carefully stewarded to get you to the place where you are now, which again is another form of, you know, witnessing spirit or God in someone's life. Yeah. When you're in the middle of it, you don't realize it's happening. You just are taking the book, you're taking the CD, and then you are having that time to reflect on it. But still, it's, I'm listening to you, and that's what I see. You know, the other thing that I was reflecting on, which isn't really pretty, is I find it very interesting that your father left his original family and then, you know, met your mother. And now here you are. And even in that, I see something divinely ordained, divinely created. All that whole situation, it's terrible that he left his original family. But now, because of that, we have you, which I find a lot of grace and beauty in that.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, for years, I didn't talk with my siblings about this, because, you know, in my brain, you just don't do that. I will say this, I really struggled with, you know, had my father done the spiritual things that he should have been doing, you know, I wouldn't even be here. Like, you know what I mean? And I was so angry and hurt about that, because I'm like, golly, I just played out, you know, how could you just walk away and leave them? And, you know, that whole thing, and, you know, and then, you know, show up in my life and not be that present at times. And just the chaos that creates for children. And I felt so bad. I just felt so bad that even in spite of his inconsistency, the stories that I heard about him and my experience with him was that the person he was, I still got the best of him. But even something good that God loves can come out of infidelity. And in spite of the infidelity, I don't have to pay for that my whole life. And I don't know I didn't know what it meant at the time. I didn't know what it would look like. I just knew that somehow I felt loved by God, and that story matched my experience. And that was enough at the time to bring me some relief from that weight of guilt for just existing. I'm so grateful to have worked through the issues that I had to work through, because they were mine. They're all mine. You pray, when you study, when you meditate, when you do whatever it is that you feel that you need to be doing that allows you to develop new neurological pathways to greater truths. And you're able to receive whatever the divine is downloading or uploading, however you want to call it, to you. You can make some shifts in your life to where you don't have to pay for other people's indiscretions. But over the course of my life, when I think about it, people have always, you know, kind of told me I was sweet. And what I attribute that to personally really is the soil that initiated my life. My mother, I mean, she had her ups and downs, but my mom smothered me with love and kisses and hugs and just teaching me how to open my heart wide. I had grandparents who were just wonderful. We went over to their home frequently. They were within walking distance. You know, like I said already, teaching me how to be benevolent. That was my safe place. I had great aunts and a great uncle who were just amazing and loving and wise and smart, just smart people and warm people. And so when I think about my personality, you know, I've often thought, like, golly, like, there are some rough edges that I'm trying my best to deal with. Had I not had that kind of upbringing where people were really warm and really present, I don't know how, you know, when I think of it as a therapist, like psychologically, like, where would I have gone? You know, like, how would I have developed if I wouldn't have had people who were very anchoring? Because even as people that I love, my elders died, I always look for strong anchors. It's the thing that made me ask my mentor, Reverend Kathy, would you please mentor me? Because I saw something in her, a lot of stuff in her that I felt like I needed that I didn't have. The therapists that have been my therapists that have worked with me over years at different times in my life, I'm like, God, I need to be grounded in the goodness, because the world will take that from you. The world is a hot mess in many ways, and it will suck the goodness right out of your soul if you are not tethered to goodness. And for me, you know, I will say that goodness, that sweetness that other people have sown into me, that's the stuff of God for me.
Absolutely. It's It's sometimes you don't even know you're being blessed when you're being blessed by someone. You find it out later.
More often than not. Exactly. More often than not. I mean, yes. I have so many volumes of people that I reflect on that I'm like, oh, I have this like them and I have this like this one. And I'm like, God, thank you for role models. If I had to nutshell it, I will say that, I mean, I've had an ex tell me like, you're just sweet. So I get to be that now for other people. And that is thrilling.
This has been episode 1 of Bite Size Blessings, the podcast all about the magic and spirit that surrounds us, if only we open our eyes to it. And whether you choose to listen to our bite-sized offering for that 5 to 10 minutes in your day that you have free, or the full interview, we are grateful that you're here. I need to thank Dee Terrell for sharing her story today, as well as the creators of the music used, Sasha End, Raphael Crux, and Alexander Nakarada. For complete attribution, please see the Bite Size Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. And remember, that's bite spelled B-Y-T-E. On the website, you can find links to other episodes, as well as to books and music I think will brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Dee, and go be a blessing in the world.